Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets.
Drum roll, please. Welcome back. We had the vice president of Rewired Talent Manage there, Meg. We had the chief operating officer, Blake, who just apparently got a promotion with that title I just gave her. We have Evan Saar, a co-founder of Rewired Talent, and we are here live at Sunseeker. Where in Florida is this? 2 hours south of Tampa Bay. I'll tell you what, this place is absolutely incredible. It's unbelievable. But more importantly here, let's get into the pre-market trading segment. We're going to talk a little bit about our guest, a little update from my personal life and something you got to know. And then maybe we'll bring some from the Rewired Talent Management team on, because they were having a blast chirping me all up and day, left and right. The last 40 hours, I feel like I've been roasted the entire time. All right, Leba. Southern Hospitality, Bravo superstar, absolute boss. Wait till this episode. You're going to see the type of revenue that she has done at her bar. You are going to see some of the businesses that she has built, the way that she built her equity from the ground up, and her whole stance on all things. I mean, complete boss. So wait for this episode. Dollars are shared, stories are shared, and this is a quick one. It's a 30-minute interview with a 25-minute recap, but this interview is full speed. Like David said at the end, he's like, I probably will have to listen to this twice. Now, let's actually give you a little tip. Talk Money to Me. That is my book that is now available for pre-order. Please go grab a copy. Send the receipt to tradingsecrets@jasontarek.com. If you buy from Target or Barnes & Noble and send the receipt, I will send you a cameo. You can ask any question you want or any type of shout out. What are you guys chirping back there? The audio picks it up. I'm trying to do an intro over here. Okay, they have much to say, so Rewired team will be coming back. But take your receipt, send it to tradingsecrets@jasontarek.com, and when you do, you will get a cameo of your request. It could be a question, and or it could be just any type of shout out. I think on the cameo website, I think I charge around $150 for that. So the book's only $29, pretty good value. A little tip I want to give you from the book is your credit score. So here's how it's made up. 35% of your score is from payment history. 30% of your score is from the amount of debt that you have. 15% of your score is from the length of credit history. 10% is amount of new credit, and 10% of your score is credit mix. Now, in this book, what I do is I take very complex scenarios and I help you improve these different numbers, whether it's investing, whether it's your credit, whether it is your net worth, and so on. But I want to give you the most basic concept of credit I can give you if you don't understand it. So think about, like, back in the day, you know, you're at school and it's lunchtime. And let's say Tommy comes over, your little Tommy wants to borrow a dollar. Well, you give Tommy a dollar, but then the next day, Tommy doesn't pay you the dollar back. And the day after that, he doesn't pay you the dollar back. Well, now the risk of lending to Tommy has gone up. So even your three-year-old, you know, third grade self would be like, all right, Tommy didn't pay me back. So next time Tommy wants a dollar, I'm going to think twice about giving it to him. And, or I'm going to say, hey, Tommy, I'll give you $1, but I need two back. That is like the most basic bare bones example of how the banking system works. We understand our credit, and then with our credit and other metrics, we then connect a liability of risk to the bank that is lending to the individual. And based on your risk level, will determine your interest level. Over the course of your entire lending life, you might have the same purchases as someone else, but their credit score is in a better shape. As a result of that, you will pay tens, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars more in interest for the same assets. So grab a copy of Talk Money to Me to help you with all personal finance things. And remember to send your receipt to tradingsecrets@jasontarek.com. Now, a little update for my personal life. I am here at the Sunseeker Resort with the Rewired team. We got Blake, we got Megan, we got Evan. You guys having a good time this weekend? What are we thinking? What do you got, Blake?
Yeah, we're having a great time.
Meg, woo!
Wow, that's a whole lot of action. Let me tell you a little bit about Meg. Meg's got a wild story. Back in the day, she used to work at Enterprise. Now she's just slinging multi-million dollar deals at Rewired Talent left and right. Blake used to work for a real housewife. Now she's stuck with Evan, Meg, and I. That's a tough shift. And Evan, you're over here getting ready for the book tour. You got any words of wisdom before you clobber a couple more Cheez-Its? Come on, Money Mafia is here. Before we go to Lev at the boss, you got anything? Anything? Coming in hot. Here you go.
It's time to rev up the engine for a huge March, huge April. Let's go book tour 2024.
Evan just booked the largest deal he's ever booked at the Rewired Talent Agency. He's very excited about that. And book tour announcement, hopefully this week, will be coming out. So we got, how many stops we got? 8 or 10? We got 10 stops. I think, did we just add Charlotte? Little teaser there. Might've just added one extra stop. So it might be 11. So stay tuned for that. But you know what? Enough of me. Enough of Sunseeker Resort, which is absolutely beautiful. Enough of Meg laughing at me, Blake chirping me, and Evan sitting over there working 24 hours a day. Let's ring the bell with the one and only Leva. Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. Today, we are joined by entrepreneur and reality TV personality known for her role on Bravo's Southern Charm and Southern Hospitality, Leva Bonaparte. Leva has been a part of the hit reality show based out of Charleston, South Carolina, in a guest capacity for 6 seasons, and as of late, a main cast member for 3 seasons now. However, outside her role on the show, Leva has been an integral part of the booming Charleston economy for the past 20 years. Leva and her husband own 5 of the hottest restaurants and bars on King Street. I still need to visit in the heart of Charleston, South Carolina. And Leva's entrepreneurial success with her restaurants and bars even generated the idea for Bravo to create the spinoff series, Southern Hospitality, which follows Leva and her staff of Charleston nightclub cast members and patrons of Republic Garden and Lounge. She has now earned the stripes by even being compared to Lisa Vanderpump, all those things, and even has an EP title. Today, we are going to talk all things, how Leva balances the responsibilities of managing several restaurants, continuing to play her role on reality TV, is a creator, entrepreneur, business owner, all the things with a family on screen and off. Leva, I don't know how you do it all, but thank you for being here with Trading Secrets.
Thanks for having me. I love that intro. Yeah, that sounds amazing.
You got a lot going on.
I do.
So much. I got to give my money mafia background information here. We got 30 minutes here. So I'm going full speed money mafia. So here we go. I think to start it off, Leva, as you think about everything that you've accomplished and where you are today, the best thing to do is kind of find the secrets of how you got there to root from where it all came. So I read that parents, Canadian, you came from Canada, mm-hmm. and I heard mm-hmm. that they had a huge multinational software company and that you sold this software for 10 years from 99 to 2009. So just as far as like career track, compensation, monetization, how well did you do within a role like that? And did it give you a solid base to make moves into ventures like a high risk play of a restaurant?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I was Canadian. I really wanted to get to the US because that's a whole different market. And it's funny, I wanted to come down here for real estate because real estate in the US is so different than Canada. I wanted to get into the flipping business and I was kind of using my dad to get here. I was like, I'll run that office, get me in there. So yeah, I was doing project management, obviously wasn't my passion. That's my family business. I wasn't making a ton of money like on salary, but I was helping my family build the business up. So essentially that was not a huge, I didn't really care. I mean, it's we were building it together. But yeah, I started to use some, you know, I always live like way beneath my means. I'm not the typical girl, like, and I shouldn't say that. That sounds really like not nice. I really am not like, I was always say like, if I dated guys, they'd be like, do you want a purse? I'm like, no, save 3 birthdays and get me a down payment on land. Like, that's just how I've always been. I was not, don't get me wrong, I have some nice things, but I've learned that from my dad. I had immigrant parents who, you know, my dad never leveraged. He always used his own money. He was like, you know, keeping his nuts sort of like a squirrel, like waiting. He would, you know, when the first crash happened, my dad was like, the world goes on clearance. You just have to be ready. Right. So he just like would put his nuts away. And I learned that from him. You know, I think that's how we got through COVID with the restaurant business, was just really running a really like skeleton shop. Like we're not the coolest kids, but we're about our numbers, right? So at the end of the day, like if things don't make sense, then we have to scale back. And that's sort of how I got here. I saved up some nuts and I did a little flip. I learned a little bit about that. That's how I met my husband, who's also doing real estate development, doing, you know, flips and commercial. I didn't know that much about it because again, so different than Canada. That's like how we had our first date, really, was me sort of trying to
two follow-ups. Yeah. You said,
in Canada, the flip is different. The whole real estate market's different than the States. For us back home that are listening right now that just don't understand what the differences are, what are the main differences?
I mean, I definitely would say there, I mean, when I was there, there wasn't that sort of, the flipping business wasn't, the return on investment wasn't the same, right? And then again, as you know, you're not Canadian, are you?
No, I grew up Buffalo, but that's...
Yeah. Okay. For some reason, I thought someone in your sphere was Canadian. I listened to podcasts.
My ex was Canadian.
Oh, okay.
We spent a long time up there and stuff.
Okay. Yeah. So, and also in Canada, you don't really write off your mortgage, right? So there's like a lot of different tax, and I just wanted to learn the market here. I wanted to learn, you know, the market in Charleston, and they're definitely, you know, flipping was a thing here. Like real estate development was a thing here. And unless you were doing it big in Canada, it was like, I make a little 20 grand here. Like it was like, is this even worth it? So return on investment in the US, whole different ballgame.
Okay. So then you make your big first. Now we talk money, we talk dollars here. Can you share what kind of return you made to get the capital to get moving in the restaurant club industry?
Oh, it was so, I mean, no, that was like, my first flip was like tiny. I bought like $110,000 house downtown Charleston, end up flipping it for 420, you know, put 100 and something in it, 150. And it wasn't a tremendous amount, but I kept moving that. I bought a property, actually at the time we were dating, me and my husband bought a property downtown that now is a short-term rental that makes a killing for like nothing. So it was just like sort of putting our nuts away, both me and my husband. Also in the beginning, we had investors. We had investors that backed us. We just bought them out the first year.
Gotcha. I would ask you that because I looked this morning, the restaurant failure rate, according to the National Restaurant Association, estimates about 30% of restaurants will not make it within 1 year. That's great. We're not talking lifetime. We're talking 1 year, 30% failure rate. So when you guys came together to say, hey, we're going to take the money that we've earned and built through flipping and software sales, and we're going to throw it all in the restaurant and club industry. My question to you is, how much of your own capital did you put in? Then if you raise capital, how much did you guys raise?
A lot. We raised like a lot, like seven digits, quite a bit. You know what I mean? Just to dump into the property. And it took almost like 2 years to build out just because Charleston's so tricky. So, you know, just floating the project. But we dumped like low, you know, seven digits just into the renovation. So it was quite a bit. And to say we put everything in it, like, we didn't even have a wedding. We went and got married on Tuesday in a park. You know, I was wearing a $60 dress, didn't have a ring. I think my ring was just like a little Costco ring. Like we put everything in it. So like I'm talking in, like,
sure. This was, your life was all tied in to restaurants and bars.
All in. Yeah. We were just like, you know, fuck it. Like all in, we're going to do this shit. Like, what do I need to serve a bunch of people dinner for? What I do want to say, like, I think that everything that I did, which I think is the key, and I had so much judgment from friends because, you know, we got married on a Tuesday. We you know, I had a lot of bougie friends. I'm Iranian. So like, listen, Persian girls get married, you know, with all the things, the bells, the whistles, the super expensive wedding. You know, most girls I grew up with were like marrying the doctors and the lawyers and whatever. I'm marrying this like, you know, entrepreneur. So I think everything I did was like, I did it for me. I did it the way I wanted to do it. I got a ton of pushback from family, from friends, girlfriends, like being judgmental. Like, well, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Even when I bought the property with Lamar, like, you're not even married. And I was like, I have a fucking contract. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm married. When you do business with people, do you have to be married to them? No, I have a contract. And well, like, you should be decent enough that, you know, we're not going to like, it's a little property. It's not a big deal. So everything I did, I got a ton of pushback. And I always say, like, from the day, even from my wedding to moving here, it was like, I really did what Leva wanted to do. Like, I couldn't care less. I think I was born with some genetic that's like, I couldn't give a fuck what you think, even if you're my best friend. I'll take it with a grain of salt, definitely park it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I do have wisdom in my decisions. But I really live for myself. And so I think that every decision I made was probably like looked at as like wild and crazy, but I made it for me. And initially the whole, again, we didn't start in food and bev. We really started in the club business. So we went straight to club. Okay. You know, Republic was the club. And that I think alcohol in the club business also is tricky in itself, but the return on booze versus the return on food is like a different ball game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You said a million unbelievable things there. I think the biggest one that people spend their entire lives trying to accomplish, Leva, is not giving a fuck what people think, right? We live in a world now where it's pretty much forced down our throats to like care what people think. As soon as even if we've like totally instilled that ability, well, through social media and everything else, it's just keeping up with the Joneses and it's hard to get away from it. So to have that from day one is a huge differentiating skill, because I think most people their entire lives fight internally to get that, but you got it. Now, here's the thing. We had Mark Laurie on. So Mark is a multi-billionaire, owns the Timberwolves with A-Rod. He had a background with Walmart CEO land. And then we also had this founder of Netflix. Both of them had two completely opposing views. Founder of Netflix says OPM, use other people's money at all costs. Mark Laurie did what you did. He had like $316,000 to his name. He went to investors and said, every single penny I have is in on this business. We won't fail because I can't fail. Otherwise, I'll be literally begging for food on the streets. You took that route. And for all my Southern, my Bravo people, Southern Hospitality, we're going to get to it. I'm in the weeds on the business side right now. When you went to say, we're going to put every penny on the line, we know it's seven figures, but how did you get other investors to come in and how much did they meet you in for?
So when I say seven figures, I think we collected about seven figures from others and then put in the rest ourselves. And it wasn't like a ton of money. It was basically at the end of the day when the real estate market crashed. I forget what year it was. It was, We had a bunch of properties and we were like, okay, but not in the best shape, but both Lamar and I were heavily involved in like philanthropy. And we noticed that like the Boys and Girls Club was closing and like all these places were closing. No one had the funds to sustain any of these sort of places that were important to us. So we started throwing these parties called Party for a Purpose, because we knew no matter what, people are always going to drink. Markets up, markets down, like whatever. People are just always drinking. People still want to get out, right? So we went to some places that just weren't doing well, went up to them and said, listen, do you want us to just throw a party? People go where we want to go. You know what I mean? Like, we just let us have your bar. We're going to let whoever show up at the front collect money. We'll pack your bar. So we did that. And then the bar sales were insane, like to the point where, you know, there were businesses that weren't doing well and we'd walk in. And their Friday and Saturday, like they were just doing, you know, let's say they were doing like $2,000 on the bar on like a Friday because they're doing poorly. We'd walk in, they're doing $30,000 just at the bar, right? Yeah. So all of a sudden they were, you know, we're like, whoa, they're like, whoa. And then at the front, we would have different nonprofits come to the front and just collect cash. Like, hey, put in $5 or don't or whatever. And it's called Party for a Purpose. We did it Friday and Saturday at different locations. And then we started to stay at this one place called Fish that wasn't, you know, known for after hours as a restaurant, but we would, those hours in the restaurant that are like the killer are like when dinner finishes and then nobody's in there. It's like, there's like 10 people having drinks. So then when their dinner was finished at like 9 PM to 2 AM, they're making killer money, probably more than they were at dinner because we were packing the place up and it was good feels. And so eventually we kind of hone this like power. And then a few people come up to us and they were like, why don't you guys just open your own place? We'd never thought about it. And then I was like, you know what? Cause everywhere we're going, there's not enough room for our parties. And then people were asking us to throw parties. And it was just basically like wherever me and Lamar went, people just kind of followed. And then, you know, it was actually Lamar who had two homeboys that they were like, you know what? Fuck it. We'll put a couple hundred in and get it together. Okay. And we did it. And then, how, you know, we
with Republic, how long did it take you to get a full return on the investment? How many years until you recovered the full investment?
It was immediate, like within the first like year or two, we'd recovered. We bought out our investors and we're not the kind of people that like go to spend. We're going to buy our investors out. We're going to, you know, reinvest in the business. That's really how we've done it. Like a lot of people would like up their lifestyle. We didn't. We've continually just reinvested in ourselves. And we've done it for a decade, you know, okay. And a lot of people like don't ride on that. They want to kind of.
All right, let me ask you this, because I'm curious about the bar industry on King Street. We know Charleston has just been booming. Let's fast forward to 2024. You had mentioned how shitty bar is doing 2K. You guys brought them to 30K. 2024, yeah. Money's flying everywhere. S&P 500's at all-time highs. Inflation's through the roof. You got the show behind you. You got everything. Mm-hmm. I'm King Street. Give me an idea on like a Friday or Saturday, you're the not your bar, but like the worst performing bar on that street versus like one of your bars. What are you pulling in on a Friday or Saturday?
I mean, we're definitely like the worst bars are doing maybe like, I don't know, $2,000, $3,000. Like, you know, a couple of people walk in Friday night, it's dead, whatever, you know, but over a weekend, we're going to hit six figures, you know?
Absolutely.
Over Friday, Saturday, depending, you know, and on a slower one, maybe, you know, a little less, but we're hitting big numbers Friday, Saturday.
Okay. So. And then from a cost structure, obviously there's a ton of expenses with running a club and restaurant. How many weekends does it take to like cover the costs in a month based on the performance you guys are having?
I mean, it's maybe going to take a weekend.
Okay. So you guys are just absolutely cranking. Yeah. That's so cool. I love it. Yeah. One thing that I saw, and I got to get to Bravo stuff because I could talk about this business forever, but it's my understanding that Gen Z and just in general, the trend is changing where people are consuming less, but they're consuming more of high quality stuff, like the luxury stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen that trend in your restaurant. I'm curious if you have. And as a result of that, I have to imagine when you're selling like the 1942 and the Casa Azul and all that, like you're probably getting mad. That's probably where your biggest upside is. So that trend is probably helping the club business, correct?
Yeah, I think it definitely is helping the club business. Back in the day, Republic was like where the expensive drinks were. You know what I mean? Because when we opened, you know, our price point was pretty high. Now that we've opened Bourbon and Bubbles and we've opened Lamar's, it's had to up itself because of the consumer. The consumer wants something better. They want more exclusive stuff. They want access to Pappy. They want stuff by the glass that not most places will sell. Like we'll have Camus by the glass. Like not a lot of places have that here. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. You know, you'll find a ton of Pappy, like a Bourbon and Bubbles where people are like, oh my God, I've been on a year for, you know, I've been on a list for 40 years trying to get this stuff. So yeah, the exclusive stuff has become, it's like a thing, you know, people are really about their booze and particular about it. And yeah, so we carry a lot more high-end stuff. I mean, Republic sells the most champagne in all of the state of South Carolina, especially in terms of the Magnum. So like, if you think like people are rolling in buying Magnums and I can't off the top of my head, but they have all these other different names, like the baby toddler one and the Ebenezer and the whatever. They have all these different names, the big bottles that people are buying them. And they're not older people, like they're college kids coming in there. So it's weird.
It's coming from something, who knows where it's coming from. Two rapid fire questions I'm curious of. What is the most expensive bottle that you've seen sold? And what's the largest tab you've seen?
I mean, obviously there's buyouts, which are different, but I want to say like our largest, I think we had a $15,000 bottle that we sold.
What is it? What is a $15,000 bottle? What is it? Do you know?
It was like a bottle of Veuve, like not a Magnum, but like the baby toddler one, you know?
Okay. Largest buyout you've seen.
That'll be like just maybe under, not six figure, but like a Friday night buyout. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Congratulations. You're killing it. I'm sure the numbers that are coming in today for your restaurant are a little different than pre-Bravo days. Was part of the movie to Bravo the exposure? Like, was that the main incentive to get exposure to blow up your existing restaurant portfolio?
So honestly, Jason, it was like funny because we were maxed out. And if you talk to any of the kids, like they'll tell you, we already had the lineups and like we're at capacities. It wasn't really about getting more people in the door. It was more about opportunities to expand, possibly license, franchise, open more spaces like across the country. That sort of like was where our head, like where my head was at, or possibly open other concepts that would bring people in. So Republic has not done tremendously better than it did years before. I definitely think, again, we don't live in LA or like some of the bigger cities where people sort of flock to where there might be cameras. It's Charleston. So people, it's like the locals are like, I don't know how there's cameras there. So it's kind of like we got a little bit more tourism, a little less locals. We're kind of known for having local spots. So I think it's sort of like done a flip. So it's not as though, you know, our numbers have skyrocketed by any means. It's like we fill capacity by whoever gets there, we fill capacity. But I do think that the big reason we did it was really the long game. And right now I'm sitting in year two of Southern Hospitality and we don't really know exactly what that long game will look like. But, you know, I'd like to see myself be able to open some places in other cities where I don't have the connections, where I can't pull a crowd. You know what I mean? Like, I think the biggest thing about restaurant and bar is, can you pull the crowd? You know what I mean? It's not always about the food and what they have to offer and the ambiance. It's really like, you need those kind of key people, like the old school concierges, like the people to kind of pull the right people in. And then you create, set this like vibe, and then people come in. And that's one thing people don't understand about, you know?
Yeah, I travel all the time, right? So I don't know where the hell I'm going. But then I find someone in the city and they know where they're going. And anytime they're like, okay, we're going to go here, it's followed by this. Yeah, we'll go here. I'm making this up, but Drake was here last week, or we're going here. All the players will come after the game here. Like, that's the thing. No one's saying, like, you know, great service, great carpet, cool energy.
Exactly. No one's like, I love the lights. They've got a really great linguine. Everyone's like, this is a spot. This is my spot. It's killer. It's like great. It's got the vibe is great. Like, everyone's just like, the vibe is great, which ends up being like a little bit of lighting, a little bit of music, a little bit of food and drink, but mostly who is in your building, right? So that's really like what sets the tone. And that's where Lamar and I started to cap out. You know, we had a kid, and it's like, can we physically be in the building? Because the way we started Republic was like mass text, like, hey, we're going here. Hey, we're going there. This is where we're kicking it at. You know what I mean? And so, you know, we started max out. I wanted to be home more with my kid. I didn't want to be out Friday and Saturday all the time. And so the long game for the show really is that we can hopefully connect with the right people and be in other cities and sort of be like, hey, do you want to open a Republic in this city? And, you know, we haven't figured out how we want to, we are not a franchise, maybe a licensing situation, or open another spot and have key people that we pick, almost like boutique style, to be able to run those spaces the way that we want them run without us needing to be there. You know?
Let me ask you this. You're now EP of Southern Hospitality. Of course, Republic's a huge part of that show. When you look at just, you've been on Southern Charm. You've done a ton of businesses, Southern Charm guest and main character. So we know you're paid episodically, or however you're negotiating that, right?
Yeah.
When you become, because this is different, we haven't really had someone on the show like this, maybe other than Rob Dyrdek, but he negotiated his deal with MTV way back when and took him to the house. But anyway, with Southern Hospitality, I'm wondering, is the play more in possibly having like some type of equity within the show, or is the greater value going to be the exposure to your businesses? When you look at it, like, do you have equity in Southern Hospitality, or are you just paid as an EP and cast? Like, how's the business model work?
Hey, we're paid as an EP, and the EP pay is a money play. I mean, some people think like, oh, EP allows you to, you know,
control stuff like that.
Yeah, no, that's not the case. You know what I mean? It's really sort of a money play, because at the end of the day, it's like, I definitely think that I would have walked away had I not received the EP, because this wasn't a show that was like created and casted. Like, this was me knowing, you know, for 6, 7, 8 years that I was very strategic in the way that this show came to happen, because they offered it to me, different production companies. Backstory, had come and offered shows to me just based on the restaurant. They were like, oh, you guys are so young. How do you own all these places? Blah, 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 blah. And I kept parking and being like, no, 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 not sure. No. And then at some point I was having fertility issues and I didn't want to film. I felt too vulnerable to film when we sort of almost moved forward with a show. And then I was like, no, I feel like it's too much stress. I finally, like, my body's taking this baby. I walked away from the deal, and the other party was extremely upset. And it, you know, just goes with like going with my gut, which I've always done. And then when Charm came about, it was really not me even attempting to be on Charm. I actually was like thinking that, because Craig was a little bit involved in the business. I was trying to get him to sort of be the face of the business. I was like, come on, I don't want to be on TV, but like, maybe this could be a play. And when producers came to town, they kept saying to me, why do you keep talking about Craig? And I was like, well, I thought you wanted to know about Craig. They were like, no, we want you on the show. And I was like, but I'm not Southern. Why would you want me on the show? And they were like, but you are Charleston. Like, you're Charleston. Wow. You are. Yeah. So I went from a place of yes. And in my mind, I was like, this is the soft launch. It's just like anything in business. Like, am I going to go open a restaurant on a shitty street? No, I'm going to go to the best street, you know, where there's the most amount of traffic, where like I have the best case of like success. So for me, when I went on to Charm, I was like, great. So if I do want to end up doing a show, I can sort of soft launch bring these viewers onto the next show instead of just like, you know, going in fresh. So okay, that's sort of where my head was at. I'm telling you more than you're asking, but that's...
Well, I mean, that makes perfect sense. There's a lot going on. And I think what's great about you explaining your thought process is it provides so much, I think, intention with what you do and how you do it. And it's no coincidence that you have found the success you have. So suppose I'm your accountant, I'm just curious from a business perspective, if I look at your Bravo income, all your Bravo income versus your restaurant income, I'm assuming, and maybe I'm way off, that the restaurant income is blowing the Bravo business model out of the park.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like hilarious. Yeah. So, it's not, yeah, it's not what I'm doing at Bravo. Like sometimes is what I'm doing on a weekend, you know, in my spots. So yeah, it's not, thus far has not been a huge like money play, but I think that it will be, you know what I mean? I remember like, if you look at like Lisa or some of the other people who have the two shows, they've been on TV for quite some time. Yeah. I'm only on third season charm. You know what I mean? I just got to the year where you actually get to like negotiate. Cause there's sort of like card first, second, and then like the third year you start to get a little wiggle room where you get to actually make some money. And so remember, I'm in those first few years. So it's not a ton of money. It's all part of like a bigger thing. People call me calculated. I feel like calculated is a negative word. I'm very intentional on what I do because my time is limited and I want a return on investment, like right down to like a hairstyle. You know what I mean? Like I'm very aware of like, okay, well, this would be the easiest return on investment, like would be this fast hair for this thing. You know what I mean? So I do that with everything and I try to make sure everything connects and makes sense because I want to do some epic shit, but time is limited. And I also want to be a present mom. And I also don't want to my family to be a concession, my marriage to be a concession, my relationships to be a concession. So I'm very, very intentional. And I like to make sure that I have I always say to the kids sometimes that the cast that I have, I'm like, if I were in your shoes, I would want to make sure that I had every possible thing to make sure that I'm successful. I would have every possible, I would dot every I and cross every T when I move forward with something. You know what I mean?
Great advice. Level. One of the things you said is that you're like, there's only so much you could do. You've done some epic shit and time is tight. Done some epic shit. I've talked to you hours about that. I do have to get your trade secret before we wrap because I know that you got to get going here. But one thing I got to ask you is just the business of being an executive producer. So you have been now an entrepreneur behind the scenes. You've been in Southern Charm where you are a cast guest. You are now having the eyes in front of the camera and behind the camera from a business perspective, financial perspective, any trading secret you can give us as an EP that's looking into the show while on the show that we wouldn't know about the business.
In what sense? Like financially or I mean, EP.
Like are these shows profitable? Do you have to pay people a ton? Like when you're an EP, like what's the business side we just wouldn't be exposed to unless we could talk to you?
Yeah. I mean, I think the shows are definitely profitable. I mean, I think that the EP play you can't always get, but I think that if you're in a position where, you know, another Bravo celebrity reached out to me and I was like, you have to also be willing to like own your stuff and be like, I walk away if I don't get, NBC's gonna hate me for saying this, but I walk away if I don't get this because I created this. This wasn't casted and created. This is my thing. You know what I mean? And I think that's the biggest thing is like, you really have to be able, I always say like negotiating, anybody knows, you got to be able to fucking walk away. You got to be willing to lose it to get it, you know, the way you want it. And I've always been willing to walk away, but also I think people know well enough that I always have skin in the game. I always show up 120%. But, you know, my biggest trading secret also too is just like, you know, like everybody says is like, go with your gut. And sometimes that means, you know, anti-hustle culture, like a little quiet. I have the best, I think like my brilliance lives in quiet. Like when my life's a little slower, when I'm quiet, I'm like, oh shit, this is the move. You know what I mean? You need that. And then the other thing is like, don't ever wait till you're ready. Cause I didn't know the whole EP thing. I didn't know doing the show was totally not my wheelhouse. I wasn't ready, but I went from a place of yes. And I think if you wait till you're ready, you'll never do it. So I think that's like when you're ready is where dreams go to die, you know, because you can only align enough and then just be like, fuck it, jump.
Yeah. You know? I mean, there's a ton of trading secrets just in this episode. The idea of like, if you're going to do something, go all in, find people that'll back you, even do some type of testing. Like you did some focus group testing, just running a bar with no expense, no risk. going from two to 30K just as a contract. There's a lot there. I think the idea of being intentional is brilliant. And it's interesting to hear from an executive producer, like even when you're negotiating with some of the cast or working with them, like some people just want it too bad, and wanting it too bad could actually hurt your business and hurt your long game. And then the one thing I'm taking away is cross every T, dot every I, like invest in yourself, your brand, because your brand is walking. But Leva, I could talk to you for another 5 hours. I know you gotta get going. We're gonna have to do a part two at some point, because
yeah,
it's like
we
just got a little sprinkle. We just got a little taste.
Yeah.
So many more roots under the surface. But I gotta find, if people have haven't been, like they're interested in to see more of what you have going on, they want to follow you on social media, where can they find all things?
I mean, right now it's just social media. I wish I had more to offer right now. I'm just so busy bee, but it would just be social media, I guess, on Instagram, Leva Bonaparte.
Instagram tag. How are they going to find
you? Yeah. Leva Bonaparte, I think is what it is.
Hey, follow Leva on social media. And in the recap, we will list all the places that she owns, where you can visit them, and everything else that she has going on. And Leva, thank you so much for being on this episode of Trading Secrets.
Thank you. I started listening to your podcast. I actually love it. I love like your fresh take. You're young. You're like so open. So I just wanted to tell you that. You're like on my Spotify now.
That means a lot. If you haven't listened to the Will Macris episode, check that one out. Will is who started Zero Bond in New York City.
And yeah.
I started to listen to that
because Lamar's is a private spot, and I started to listen to what he was doing, and I was like, oh, this is interesting. Send it to my husband. So
it's super bold. There's a huge Zero Bond. Every play Zero Bond is now. I feel like that's going to be one of your next ventures, but I know you got to get going. So Leva, thank you for being with us. This was awesome. All right. We'll talk soon. Thanks for your time.
Ding, ding, ding. We are closing in the bell to the Leva episode. A boss, a fast talker, a lot of action, a business tycoon in the making. And I would definitely say inspiration. David, I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts, a lot of questions, but also in this recap, I want you to know that at some point, you are not getting away from the golden question that Money Mafia is asking. Where the hell is David's cryptocurrency? We now see Bitcoin has broken $60,000 per coin. We see Ethereum trending north above $3,500 per coin. We know you own both of those. We know that your Bitcoin has been in la la land for 3 years running. So before we get into that, David, how are we doing? Leva, what are we thinking?
Thanks for spiking my anxiety before I get to speak today. But great to be here with you. Yeah, no, I mean, love another Canadian. Got to shout out my Canadians when I get a chance. Look, when I listen to this, Jay, this is what's going through my mind when it ended. You ever been there? I'm going to paint a picture for you. You ever been there? You're studying for a test. You got the textbook open. You know it's really important information. You're reading. You've read like 21 pages, and all of a sudden it clicks in, and you're like, holy shit, I don't know if I just retained what was said in the last 7 pages. And then you go back and you read it and you're like, wow, thank God I read that. I had to go back and listen to this episode twice because she was coming at us a mile a minute. Everything that she was saying was liquid gold. It was educational. It was informational. And I just couldn't keep up, to be honest. The first time, I just couldn't keep up. So I'm glad I went back and I re-listened to it. And it's even to the point where I'm like, I don't know, maybe you got to get her on again down the road because she is electric.
She is electric. You know what? Yeah, it's perfectly said. It is kind of like 7 pages you read. You might have to go back. You're not sure if you got it all in because she has so much firing. And when we ended the podcast, she was like, because we only scheduled 30 minutes. And she's like, I'm sorry. You need to come back. You're coming to Charlotte. Come to one of our restaurants. You're going to come to our office. And we're going to do like a 2-hour episode. So for everyone back there, more is coming with Leva. David, some of the topics we discussed, there's a lot of moving parts there, a lot of numbers, most expensive bottles, all the things. What was going through your head as she was explaining some of these things?
Yeah, I mean, just really impressive how she got her start, obviously with the family business, and then really wanted to get to the United States, and then started in the flip game, like wanted to get to the United States because she could start in the flip game, the real estate, and it kind of built her in where she is now. I really liked how she talked about always like reinvesting in themselves for over a decade. I think she learned that from like her family business. She never made a big salary from her family business because she was kind of reinvesting her time in building the business. And then, you know, when she got into the restaurants, it was the same thing, right? Just reinvesting in herself for over a decade. which I thought was, would you agree, a really smart business strategy for kind of the, you know, the industry that she was in?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, it's everything. In my book, Talk Money to Me, I talk about this a lot. Like, if you've invested $100,000 in 1974 in the S&P 500, by the end of 2023, that $100,000, if was compounding and reinvested it, would be worth over $18 million. I talk about like different strategies of like what you can do in the markets and how you can continue to reinvest, because that is the name of the game. Whether it's in yourself, a business, education, the whole idea of reinvesting time and resources into the things you want is the definition of how it comes to fruition.
I have a question. How do you know as an entrepreneur, maybe a business owner, when is it time to reinvest in the business and or take some of the revenue that you've generated and pay yourself? Because we've kind of heard that on the podcast a couple of times. Like, it's really, really important that as you go through this, you make sure you're paying yourself, pay yourself first. But then you're also, now we're talking about reinvesting. No, don't pay yourself necessarily. Reinvest in the business for kind of long-term equity play.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, because one of the big things with pay yourself, the idea behind that is once money's coming in, what they're saying is then take a portion of that and put that away, pay yourself. So, you know, 5K is coming in. Before you do anything with that money, take $1,000, go put it into an investment or something, like pay yourself, then use that 4K for other expenditures. But your next question, which is much more sophisticated, is a really good one. Like, with cash, what do you do? How do you do it? When do you keep it in a company? When you distribute it? A big thing now is if you own an LLC, you have to, at the very minimum, take out your tax liability. So whatever profit that was in the company, you are going to have to pay taxes on that, whether you take the cash out or not. So a good estimation is 40% of whatever your net profit is and the percentage you own, take that to at the minimum, cover your tax liability. And then you just have to project your expenses. There's something called the burn rate, David. We talked about it. It's like, how much cash are you burning on a month-to-month basis? And then understanding how long and how much cash you have to operate should the business not make any money. So a good idea behind cash reserves and what you're reinvesting is understanding what your burn rate is and what you're comfortable with. And then you can determine how much you want to take out.
This is a top 10 question I've asked maybe on the recap business-wise in like the last 3 years. So I feel good about myself.
That was a good one.
Hey,
dude,
we're talking burn rate that we've talked about. You know, obviously ROI, we talk about in many different ways. We talked about OPM in this. So some reoccurring themes that we're starting to see, which I love. One question I did have, and maybe I should know this from my club days, but you talked about the most expensive bottle, a 15K bottle of Veuve. That's just absolutely banana lands. But the largest tab, she said, was just shy of a six-figure buyout. What is a buyout in terms of that? I assume it's maybe buying the space, buying a bigger space, buying the entire space. Is that what it is?
So let's talk a little bit. So, David, I just joined this club in New York. It's called Zero Bond, okay? And it's just like...
Will Macris, ever heard of it?
Yeah, Will Macris, guys. Go back to that episode. Will Macris, he was on the show. He talks about Zero Bond. It is quite the club with a lot of members that are, you can go to that episode. Tom Brady, Kim Kardashian, Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, it's pretty crazy. I had to be on the wait list for like probably 9 months or so. But, and also, funny story about Will Macris, who's very well connected. He was in Kim Kardashian's box in the Super Bowl, and I think was like partying so hard through the whole week of the Super Bowl that he was passed out, literally passed out in Kim Kardashian's box. And there's TMZ reports, there's stuff everywhere on Will Macris passed out in the Super Bowl in Kim Kardashian's suite, which is hilarious. But, and then I'll give you a couple of questions, David, but with the Zero Bond, because there's a lot of these like high profile people that go there, actually, Girl With No Job's also there too. There's a bunch of people, but because a lot of these people go there, what like higher end celebrities do will do a buyout. So if I'm a member, I can go whenever I want. But suppose, I don't know, Aaron Rodgers, he just had one. It was very public. He wants to celebrate his birthday. He doesn't want guys like me being able to go, even though it's a private club. He will buy out the entire bar, the entire event space for a certain period of time. There's a minimum usually associated with that. And so let's say it's a $100,000 buyout. No one can come in that place, but at the bare minimum, no matter what the tab is, $100,000 is due. They're all structured different, but that's the idea of a buyout.
Okay. So buyout usually includes booze up until a certain point.
booze, food, all that up until a certain point.
Okay.
And it's likely if someone's doing a buyout, they're going to just keep ripping it.
So I remember when I asked Will Macris on the episode, because I was actually fortunate enough to be on that episode. We did it during the book tour 2 years ago, Jay. Look at this coming full circle. I asked him how many members Zero Bond had. He said just the right amount. And I asked him how much a membership cost. He said just the right price. So can I put you in the hot seat?
Yeah.
And ask you how much you pay for a membership? And do you have an idea of how many members that there are?
Yeah, I'll give you the exact numbers next time, but I believe it's just like $4,500 or $5,000, I think, for the year.
Okay.
So it's an annual fee. Let's say it's $4,000 to $5,000. You get access. You can bring up to 2 or 3 guests, full working space. They have events weekly. They have poker games. They have a bunch of things. And when you eat and drink there, you have to pay for it, though.
Yeah. So it's on top of that. Now, you said working space. Yeah. So there's like you can go there and whip up the laptop and like.
Yeah, they have an area there where you can like whip out the laptop and do some stuff like that. And then they're building a rooftop too. And then they're building a Zero Bond in Las Vegas, actually.
Okay. Okay. Love that. Maybe do a live podcast from Zero Bond in the workspace. I don't know.
Okay. Might have to do that. I will say, I think that's a really good part to talk about the recap though, because if you enjoyed this episode, definitely go check out the Will Macris episode. The other thing I'll put out there right now, go buy a copy of Talk Money to Me on Amazon, Target, Barnes and Nobles, send a copy of the receipt to tradingsecrets@jasontarek.com and come join our focus group. We had over 200 people join the focus group. About 70 or so attended the focus group study last week. It was electric. The questions, the interactions, the fun that was had. I was an open book. People were drilling me with all questions. We're going to do another focus group. I'm going to, again, announce the stops on the tour, the people that are coming, and I need your ideas for marketing. So grab a copy, send it to tradingsecrets@jasontarek.com. David, what else you got for Leba?
Well, I can't let the recap go by without bringing up these two quotes that she had, because I thought that they were just unbelievable and two quotes that I've never heard so far on all of the guests that we had. I love how she's like, yeah, I have some nice things, but I'm not a gift girl. What do, like she said, do I want a purse for a birthday gift? No, I'm going to tell him that I want 3 birthdays at once and get me a plot of land. I just loved like her mindset behind that. And then the next one, she goes, I always remember my dad telling me when the world goes on clearance, you better be ready to buy. And I kind of want to take that into kind of our current day time. Now, you mentioned Bitcoin, crypto, starting to sweat a little bit. But, you know, with all the attention on that, is it a good time, do you think, to buy crypto? Is something else going to be maybe more on sale because Bitcoin's the big shiny thing? And overall, do you think with where our economy is right now that we are in a clearance? So I'm just going to spin that to you.
I'm just not a follow the trend guy. Like, I want to be in before it happens. Fortunately, steel hands over here, steel diamond hands, whatever the hell they say. I held all my Bitcoin. So now it's up. But, you know, in general, if you missed it, Bitcoin did rip over 61K a coin, then quickly climbed to 64K. And then there was a glitch with Coinbase, right? And so this glitch showed everyone's account at zero. And then Bitcoin dumped at 60,000. So you still see ebbs and flows with Bitcoin, even though there's so much exposure. Now, what's crazy is yesterday, Bitcoin, there was a breaking news. The total spot hashtag Bitcoin ETF trading volume surpassed $7.5 billion in one day, more than doubling its previous record. You add BlackRock, put in $3.2 billion, Grayscale, almost $2 billion, Fidelity, $1.5. So the point is that there's a ton of trading volume towards Bitcoin. Records are hitting it, so more people are interested. And when there's more people interested, there's more buzz, it's likely to go up. But I'm not big on like jumping on trends when it's too late. Are things on clearance right now? No, I definitely wouldn't say that. Right, S&P 500 was up 24% last year. So we know that the S&P 500 is trading at all-time highs. We know that real estate, depending on where you live, has taken some kind of pullback and or continued to appreciate. We still see interest rates trending high, although we're hearing rate cuts. And we know that we've been battling with inflation for like 2-3 years. So if anything, it's like, this is definitely not clearance time, the opposite of clearance time. But the only question is, do prices continue to go up, and are you missing the boat if you're waiting for clearance time?
No, I mean, that makes perfect sense. And you know what? Maybe you can resonate a little bit with me with what I'm going through right now with my crypto, because Jason, you said your strategy, you said steel hands or diamond hands. My strategy when I bought crypto was to HODL. And if anyone in the crypto game knows what
HODL,
H-O-D-L, it's hang on for dear life. And so when I bought crypto for $2,600 in 2017, I said, I'm going to hold on to my Bitcoin for as long as possible. So what did I do? I put it in the wallet that everyone else, my buddies back home had. It was called Jax. And then Jax moved to Jax Liberty. And that's where we left it last with me when Jax Liberty was having a hard time finding all, had some of my crypto, had my Bitcoin, had 4 Ethereum, but I had 20 more Ethereum that wasn't showing up. Well, I hodled it on from there. And one of my best friends, you know, Ben Rosen, he's big into the crypto game. He goes, dude, you got to get on the crypto. I knew you were in Jax, and I just came across an article that says Jax Liberty is being retired.
Oh, wow.
Here's what you need to know. So Jax Liberty, is Jax Liberty shutting down? Jax Liberty is official being retired on March 27th, 2023. So almost a year ago. So now I have to, now Ben is trying to help me go on the mission here of trying to get it back. And we're having a hard time. Let's just say that. So if you are out there and you are on this journey with me, I am not shying away from trying to find it because I have to find it because the wallet that I owned, which is such bullshit. Like, I'm sorry. It's bullshit. Like, it's just, I'm holding on for dear life, storing it away, trying to be responsible by not touching it, not accessing it, not trying to be smarter than the crypto game by making trades. How am I supposed to know on a daily basis, weekly basis, that Jax Liberty shuts down? So that's where I'm at right now. It sucks. Every time it spikes, I get a little anxiety, but I got to find it. I got people trying to help me. If you've had problems out there with Jax Liberty, please send me a DM. I need your help.
David, but what's the takeaway here? We got to have our logins to our accounts. We got to know where stuff is, and we have to be able to access it. Like, we could go back and run the fucking tapes, bro. You had said many times, I don't know where the login is. I don't care. I'm going to let it rip. I love the idea of like set it, forget it, and don't worry about it because people have emotional highs and lows and pull things out. Love that. What I don't love is the mismanagement of it. Now it's in la-la land. It could be 50K. That's life-changing money.
You know what I used to do way better than what I do now is I used to, and you know me, I'm a big notes app guy. I used to do a monthly check of my net worth, and I used to check all my retirement accounts, all my stock accounts, my crypto accounts, my savings, my checkings, and I used to legitimately add it all up and understand what my net worth is minus all any debt that I owed, and I would do that every month in my notes app. Well, I stopped getting away from that, and now I'm not checking these accounts more frequently. So God forbid if I do have a password or an upgrade or my fucking wallet shuts down, I probably would have known that. Probably would have known that, Jay.
Yeah. You know what, David, we're going to have to find a new system. The good news too, talk to me, is a whole chapter understanding your net worth, because we so worry about so many different numbers, but your net worth is your golden number. And I walk through each step of how to understand your net worth, how to calculate it. And I think you were doing exactly right. You should update it monthly or quarterly so you could see how things are going. But David, I hope you find it.
Thanks.
This is a good learning lesson for Money Mafia. That's a lot of money. We're praying for you. We're sending our energy. If you think you need to send David some positive energy, just go give 5 stars in the ratings and say, good luck, David. Go get that money, kid. What else you got, David? Bitcoin's ripping. The market's off the charge. Leba is just a purebred boss. Trading Secrets is literally just crushing it. Top 10 in all business episodes last week. YouTube is lit. If you guys have not subscribed to YouTube, get your ass over there and hit that subscribe button because YouTube numbers are lit. Download numbers have been off the charts. What else you got for me, David?
Are we still saying lit? Are we still doing that?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Is there a new one?
I don't know.
I mean, you work with the kids all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think we'll say lit still. I think we can do that. One thing I do have to say, the
Wait. What do the kids say? We know you say waffled. We got that from last episode. What else do the kids say?
If you haven't listened to last week's recap, the Hennigy recap, I was cackling. I was cackling in my car on the way home last night. I thought it was awesome. You know what? They say a bunch of things. Sometimes I try and tune it out because I'm getting to that age where I don't know if I can relate. But I'm going to say lit today around the kids. And I'm going to see if I get any looks. I'll report back.
Have you heard that people say bet?
Yeah. Oh yeah. All the time.
Okay. What do you mean? Like, do you think that's normal? I've never said that in my life.
Oh, I would never say it. Like, do kids say it when I like give them hockey, like in game, it'll be like,
yeah,
hey, you got to do it. And he'll be like, bet.
Like, so bet's like, yeah, got it.
Bet's like, okay, got it. Yeah.
So stupid.
Yeah. So stupid. You were talking reviews, Jay. I got a couple more things, but I can't let this one go. Andrea from Boston left us the sweetest review titled Breath of Fresh Air. Hey, Jason and David, you guys have been a breath of fresh air on Monday mornings. I'm a mom of two little kiddos working full time with some health challenges. Your podcast puts a smile on my face every week. Jason, as you say in Restart Roadmap, and I know you had the Sunday scaries, I don't have that anymore thanks to your podcast. This podcast is my me time. I listen while I drop my kids to school, and what a gift it is to be able to learn about finances from so many different angles and viewpoints. So thank you both for making my day a little brighter. Can't wait to come to the Boston signing. You're going to have to give her a shout out. Maybe bring her on stage, have her a little, you know, rapid fire about her favorite things on the podcast. I don't know. I'm just throwing ideas out there, but I had to put it out there. Such a sweet review she left.
That was the juice I needed to feel lit today. No, that's such a sweet message, and all those reviews. Thank you so much for all of them. Honestly, that means the world to us. We can't thank you enough. Here's what I'm going to do too. If you're still with me, talk money to me. If you buy a copy right now from Target or Barnes & Noble and you send me a receipt, tradingsecrets@jasontardik.com, I'm going to send you a free cameo, whatever cameo you want. It could be a question. It could be a shout out, whatever you want. I think on that cameo app, I don't know, I think I charge like $150 or something. So $150 value for FREE. Just grab a copy of Talk Money to Me. David, amazing. You got anything else before we wrap?
Well, I'm surprised that you've never been to King Street. So I'm just gonna add that to our bucket list. I think it's a place that you gotta go. I think we gotta do a little bop-de-doo around some of these restaurants. Like she said, Camus by the glass. She said, this generation just wants more exclusive things. She's got Poppy at Bourbon and Bubbles over there. Republic sells more champagne than any restaurant in South Carolina. I mean, Leva is doing some things. You know, I loved her negotiation strategy. You got to be willing to lose it to get it how you actually want it. Like I said, if you felt like there wasn't as many takeaways, it's because your brain was probably in a blender trying to keep up with her. Go listen to it again. Keep subscribing. Keep watching. And another great episode, Jay.
And we have some great episodes in the tank, David. A lot are coming. We have Dr. Shaw, who is number three U.S. skin influencer across all skincare influencers. And number one is Hailey Bieber. So any and all skin questions, the business behind it, and he's a legit doctor, you're going to get those answers. We have Kat Stickler, the famous TikToker, coming on. We have Colton Underwood that we're interviewing here soon. We have Jessica from Love is Blind coming on. So let me tell you, the queue of people is stacked. And once that book tour ends, we will be having a second episode to get into the more nitty gritty of all things. We will have founders on. We will have personal stories sometimes. It's going to be a wild card episode, depending on that week and what's going on. The idea is that we're niching down in whatever area of life that week we decide to, because niche is a big part of business. But that is all I got. David, anything before I wrap?
Nope, good to go.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Trading Secrets. Hopefully one you couldn't afford to miss. You guys have a hell of a week.